tuned in to the Community Cats Podcast. Ready? Let's go.
Welcome to the Community Cats Podcast. I'm your host, Stacey LeBaron. I've been involved helping homeless cats for over 30 years with the Merrimack River Feline Rescue Society. The goal of this podcast is to expose you to amazing people who are improving the lives of cats. I hope these interviews will help you learn how you can turn your passion for cats into action. And today we're speaking with John Pivaler. John is an animal welfare field services emergency response and animal population management consultant with over 20 years of global experience. He is the owner of Humane Innovations LLC and provides training, product sales, equipment development, and consultation services for organizations around the world. John is a military veteran who began his animal welfare career in 2004, working with local stakeholders to develop the first progressive animal shelter, sanctuary, and animal population management program in Kuwait, which he ran as managing director for 11 years. He has built disaster response, animal control, and population management programs from the ground up, balancing practicality with best practice standards and ethics. His experience across several continents has made him a frequent speaker and educator on topics including animal handling and capture, animal population management, and emergency response. In addition to extensive work and personal travel, John enjoys the outdoors, ultra running, paddling, and time with family, including his wife, two children, dogs, cats, chickens, and cows. John, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Stacey.
All right, John. So with all of this exposure you've had with animals, how'd you get to be so passionate about cats?
You know, my story makes no sense in terms of how I got passionate about cats. You mentioned my bio. I started off in Kuwait, so I got out of the service and I took a contracting job. It was in the western desert of Kuwait. It was like nowhere. There was nothing there. A bunch of buildings that had been destroyed in the first Gulf War, and like a few contractors and some Kuwaiti Air Force guys and F-18s. And we had some dogs show up, and I started sort of interacting with them, and they started having more needs that I felt like I could meet. So it was really just circumstantial. I wouldn't have considered myself a pet lover before that. We had a cat growing up. It wasn't a huge thing for my family, but I think maybe just being in those circumstances and seeing animals in need, and that sort of a couple of dogs snowballed into, at one point I had 18 dogs in an abandoned building. I was basically running an illicit shelter in a munitions warehouse. It did not go well, but they became the first dogs in the first shelter, and that shelter evolved to include cats. And sort of as we started building programs, especially into the field, we started doing a lot of cat TNR and dog TNR and other sort of program management stuff.
So how did you find out about TNR?
I think through Animal Care Expo, really. There wasn't a lot going on back in 2004. The internet was not the vast trove of information that it is now. So I went to that conference. I think I went to an Asia for Animals conference. I just met a few people who were kind of pioneering in this field and learned what it was. And then we came back to Kuwait and we met with the government and said, aha, we have the solution. You need to do TNR. That didn't really go over very well. Great. Thank you very much. Have a nice day. So I went back to the drawing board. I thought, I'm not a veterinarian, so I can't work on the surgical piece. I'm not going to become a HKHV surgeon. So what's the one thing that's stopping us? And we were really focused on dogs at that time. What's the main thing stopping us, which is being able to catch the animals? They're very difficult to capture for a variety of reasons. The environment there is very hostile toward animals, and people can be. So it's a very harsh environment, and it results in dogs that are very, very hard to catch. So really went to the drawing boards, or how are we going to catch these animals? So learn how to do that the hard way over a lot of time, a lot of effort. Once to sort of crack that code, eventually the state oil company came to us and said, hey, we want a better way to manage animals. Initially dogs again, but then eventually dogs and cats. And we said, well, it just so happens like we know how to do this thing. And so they engaged us as a subcontractor to manage their dog and cat population. And so really started to work more in cat TNR.
When you talk about working with them, are you doing rescue? Are you doing TNR for dogs? Were many of those dogs what we would think of as feral dogs?
Yeah, it's really complex in Kuwait in particular. We did TNR for dogs. I can't say it went very well for the dogs because their life expectancy is so short. So very difficult in that environment, a lot of rescue. We did the best we could for every animal. But we started with TNR as the basis, really identified that TNR is the only acceptable solution for cats. It's the only thing I've ever seen work anywhere, and I've been in a lot of places. to really advocate strongly for TNR of cats and for dogs in most places. Most places, TNR for dogs works very well. They can be harder to catch, but once you get ahead of the curve, I really see a huge difference very quickly. So it definitely is the right pathway for population management.
So you say that dogs are harder to catch than cats. So for those of us who are out there trapping cats and are saying, oh, I've got three cats left in my colony, but they're just impossible to catch. I mean, I hear all the time, this cat is trap smart. This cat is drop trap smart. This cat is X, Y, and Z smart, will never be caught. Do you have any hot tips for them?
Probably a few. And there's a lot of knowledge in this space. And so for one thing, I really believe in the ingenuity of the people who do this. But there's also the chance that you haven't heard of something or haven't been exposed to something. Every animal is pretty much catchable. You just probably haven't figured out the right thing that will catch that animal because it's so subjective. So they may be conditioned to not like box traps, and so box traps won't work, or it could be the size of the box trap. So starting with a 30-inch trap, moving up to a 36, and then eventually you got to jump up to a dog-sized or a coyote-sized trap. And there's some tricks to that. So you're going to use a very big trap. You're going to have to figure out how to process it, but also how to trigger it. So if a dog-sized trap needs, let's say, 6 pounds of pressure, and you're trying to catch a 5-pound cat, you've got to put some weight in that box trap on the trigger so that you can actually catch that animal. And that works well for smaller animals as well. If you're trying to catch groups of animals, you got to offset that. We can also look at what we call missy traps or colony traps. These tools can work well for cats as well. It's just very hard to process the cat, so you have to be prepared for what the processing will look like. You basically end up with a cat in a fairly large cage, as big as you need it to be. We recently did a project in Puerto Rico where we were focused on dogs in terms of difficulty, but volume, we were working at cats. But anyway, so we personally built a colony trap for them for dogs, and we deployed that as a standalone trap at the landfill that has both an optical sensor. So when the animal passes through, the optical sensor triggers the door, and a remote control. And we also disassembled it and built it onto the front of somebody's house where they had kind of a partly enclosed porch. We sort of zip tied that in place and used the front porch as a trap. So we just converted the entire building into the trap. So that works well in abandoned buildings, like in anything, as long as you can get complete containment. And obviously with a cat, complete containment means quite small openings. It can't be any space where the cat can get out, but you can convert buildings and create spaces that are quite large. With the remote control, then you can really target trap the individual that you want. The triggers work well on, you can use them on gravity door traps, cat traps or dog traps. So if you want to selectively trap that way, Tomahawk also has triggers. And I shameless plug, I do sell everything Tomahawk sells. So you can use that trigger as well. The trigger that I make is custom. You can use it on the box traps, but it's really designed for the custom modular traps. So that's always an option.
It was funny, many years ago, back in the 90s, there was a situation where we had to trap and remove a colony of cats. And the strategy that you're sort of talking about, which is, it's almost like a phasing of catching of the cats. So like if you can get them into one of the rooms in the building, and then you can trap from within that space. So it's like a staged level rather than just going, oh, I've set all these traps out and nobody's going into those traps. I mean, you'll get a certain level, but then you have to kind of work to contain, to trap, to be able to get those last cats.
Yeah, I always tell everybody conditioning is such an important part of colony management. If you're trying to get an individual, it also matters a lot. But if you want to catch 40 out of 40 cats, preferably all 40 of those cats need to be comfortable with the equipment in their space. And whether that means you're deploying real traps before you're ready to catch, or broken traps, or anything that looks remotely like a trap, put it in the environment early. I prefer to bed all of my traps with dirt, if at all possible, even if I have to bring dirt from very far away, so that it's as comfortable as possible for the animal. That also gives you tracks so you can sort of see who's working your trap, what species is working your trap, how many individuals maybe, how far into the trap they're going. Now, if you can add cameras, great. That's more intelligence. That's more cost. It doesn't really work when you're trying to examine 40. Traps, for instance. You might be able to see a few on a camera. So the camera, I think, is very important. But just conditioning in general, I think dirt is a very underutilized tool. A shovel is a very essential trapping tool, in my opinion.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that the word conditioning is really important. And I think it's underutilized for sure. Last summer, we had a situation here in Vermont where we did a TNR project at a local barn. We had one day that we had opportunity to get the cats to the clinic. So there was no wiggle room. We had to get everybody or we were in trouble. So we got the cats used to being fed under drop traps, being fed in box traps, and being fed only once a day. And we did that for a week before the trapping started. And we started the trapping like 3 days before the clinic. And they thought they had 20 cats. We ended up with 27 cats, but everybody was caught. And so it can be done, but you have to do that front part or else you aren't going to be successful.
Totally. And if you're down to the last few animals in your colony, then you might need to just stop, back up, and come up with a 3, 4, 6, 8 week plan where you recondition your animals. Let them settle into a routine, make only very small changes over time, let them get comfortable. If you're working with new colonies, always assume there's more cats than you think there are, than you've seen, that there's at least one cat that's not comfortable coming in to the feeding area or whatever. While you're there, always assume there's more cats, and if at all possible, bring as many traps or more traps than you think there are cats. It's much harder to deal with a colony if you have 5 traps and you're trying to catch 40 cats because they're learning from each other. You can help to overcome that through conditioning, but there's no substitute for just having a 1-to-1 or better ratio.
Right. And also the veterinarians, and I get it from the veterinarian side. So in my dream world, we have a colony. We're going to get the whole group trapped. We're going to bring them all to the vet. We're going to get them all done at one time. And then there are a lot of veterinarians out there that will be like, I can give you 2 appointments a week. And so how does the trapping strategy adjust for organizations that sort of have piecemeal appointments versus those that have the opportunity at those larger bulk appointments?
I mean, again, back to conditioning, like leaving traps out, or again, something that looks like a trap, whether it's something that you make or it's a broken, damaged trap that nobody wants, anything that looks like that, so that the cats, again, when they do get trapped, it's much more circumstantial. It's like getting a bee sting or stepping on a thorn or something. Like, it's a weird circumstance that happened. There's not as much direct association with the equipment because you want, over time, all the animals to be comfortable working a trap. So I think that helps a lot. That is a huge limiting factor. I know that is reality for a lot of people. I've been fortunate to work on a lot of programs where there are virtually no limits to the number of animals we can bring in. But I appreciate that's a luxury.
So I have the opportunity. I am a co-teacher of a course called Community Cats Program Management course that's offered by the University of the Pacific. And these are either community cat program managers or these are individuals who are starting their own TNR organizations. So if you were just starting out with developing a TNR program or a community cat program, you have no equipment, what would be like your base minimal equipment to be able to be successful with a program?
Well, I think the thing that's missing from the majority of TNR programs is actual information about the size of the problem that you're facing. So that intelligence piece is missing from most, which kind of informs, like, if we want to be successful, we want to hit the 80%+ benchmark, and we need to get up there in numbers between 80 and 100% of cats altered, you'd have some sense of how many cats that is, at whatever geographical scale makes sense. If it's just you and your neighborhood, then having a good sense of how many cats there are will inform your strategy. I think a lot of times we sort of end up spinning our wheels because we just jump into it and have no idea what the scale of the problem is even. That may be much smaller than you think. You may be actually seeing all of the cats and that's all there is, but you have a sense that there must be hundreds because you see a dozen. But in fact, there's only a dozen. That's possible. And I've seen that plenty of times. Or that dozen actually is 1,000 that live in this broader neighborhood because there's high availability of resources and it's a pretty safe place for cats. So either one is possible, but we won't know that for sure until we've done some research. So start off by conducting that research. I mean, I think it's valuable to have some box traps and some drop traps, certainly. Even if you make your drop trap, not everything has to be commercially made. As a salesperson for the commercially made stuff, love it if you get that, but also want you to be able to help cats and work with what you've got. So the equipment matters, but like you said, you referred to the whole pipeline. So you've got to think through, okay, capture is one piece, but quality surgery is another really important piece. It does us no good and doesn't help cats at all if we don't have the capacity to do the surgery. And if the surgery is not of the quality that's necessary to do any kind of rapid release or any release. So the animals need to be altered in a way that really meets the standard for hopefully rapid release. We don't want to keep them in care any longer than is necessary. I know there's a lot of opinion on what release times look like, but a day, 2 days, something like that is the standard we want to see. So the surgery has to be of good enough quality to allow for that, where there's very low risk of complication. So we really have to look at each piece in the pipeline and make sure it exists. So it's not, we don't want to front load the getting a lot of equipment and putting a lot of money into that if there's not the surgical capacity. And then the care capacity afterwards, like how long are you going to keep animals in care? Where is that going to happen? Like, do you have a safe, quiet place that has either, it's not too hot, not too cold, that type of thing? And do you have enough humans involved? So sometimes it's like building a group of people, looking at each of these elements, doing all that research and figuring out like, what do we need then to perform? If we have a sense that there's 100 cats, okay, we can, 20 traps would be a good starting point to do 100 cats. I'd rather have 100 traps, but that's not realistic for most people.
Right. Yeah. And I sort of look at it as the sort of the feline ecosystem needs assessment. So we identify a target area because many of us, we get phone calls from all over the place. So we want to ping all over the place, but that's not strategically a good use of our resources. So we have to identify an area that works for us and for what our tools are and who else is serving in that area, providing spay neuter services, rescue services, just general volunteers, people, caregivers who are feeding, and then what are the services that are in other areas. It's a motley group of us that are all together trying to make this work. I can't do all the work myself, and I think it's important for us to figure out ways to communicate. You said, get that intelligence. What is that intelligence that's going on in the community? And as a good baseline, we have our community cat calculator, which works on a population model to try and determine how many cats you need to do trap, neuter, return for, how many owned cats you also need to spay, neuter, because if you're only doing TNR, but there's no affordable spay, neuter for owned cats in the community, you're just going to be shooting yourself in the foot, in my personal opinion, because I did it for 10 years. I did free TNR for 8 years without any impact in my local community as well as in the sheltering community. And so we definitely needed to move into that owned cat sphere and getting by factor of 6 to 10, depending on your area, an increase in number of spay neuters into that owned area to be able to be impactful. And so we need to sort of overlap together with regards to that.
What happens to cats when disaster strikes? The Lahaina wildfire left behind hundreds of surviving cats, but thanks to a coordinated rescue effort, many were saved. Now the experts behind that response are sharing their insights, from on-the-ground rescues to reunification and placement. On May 13th, from 1 to 6:15 p.m. Eastern Time, join those who are on the ground in Maui for a vital discussion on disaster preparedness for cats. Learn how to rescue and find outcomes for cats in crisis, and how you can prepare your own community. Sign up now at communitycatspodcast.com/recover, because no cat should be left behind.
Want an easy grant opportunity for your animal organization? Maddie's Fund is giving away a $3,000 grant each month to one lucky Maddie's Pet Forum member. You'll automatically be entered to win each month when you start a new discussion, reply to a new post, or upload a new library resource. Learn more at forum.maddiesfund.org today. Are you a proud cat parent looking for the perfect, affordable health care for your kitty? Well, look no further than the Community Cat Clinic, conveniently located in Woodstock, Georgia, just north of Atlanta and not too far from the Tennessee and South Carolina borders. The health and happiness of all cats are the top priorities at this feline-only hospital. From preventative care, spay, neuter, and vaccines, to specialized and innovative treatments like full-mouth dental, ultrasound, radio, iodine therapy, emergency blockage cases, they've got your cat's well-being covered. For the TNR community and local shelters, they offer easy-to-access, low-cost spay-neuter services
and volume appointments. So if you want to do a large TNR project, this is the clinic you want to go to. It's worth the extra trip. Appointments are available most days. Check out the Community Cat Clinic online at communitycatclinic.com or visit them in person at the Walmart Shopping Center at the Shops of Trichem on Highway 92 at Trichem Road in Woodstock, Georgia. More per, less price.
You know, do you have any brilliant solutions to this challenge that we're faced with?
To the veterinary shortage? No. I stay in my lane. I love our veterinarians. I want the best for them, as many of them as possible. I don't have a solution for that. I love working with them and bringing them animals to alter. I stay in my lane, which is working in the field and bringing the animals into care and getting them back where they came from and trying to use technology to do that. Yeah, to your point too, like I wanted to just say, it's really important to understand the source of animals as well, because the population that lives outside now and is breeding, that's one piece of the source, but owned animal abandonment is a source, or even just overflow if someone has unwanted kittens or doesn't even know that their cat's pregnant or whatever, and it sort of spills outside. We have to understand what the sources are and target all of that at the same time, which is why we need to understand what our actual problem looks like.
Yeah, I always talk about Adam and Eve and making sure that they don't meet up, and Adam's in one house and Eve's in the other house, and Eve's not spayed and Adam's not neutered. So obviously Eve will go and eat. Adam's going to start spraying around the house. Bye-bye. And then they meet and there we go. So, and I literally thought about Adam and Eve before I started our mobile spay neuter clinic, the Catmobile at the MRFRS, which drives around to different areas and offers affordable spay neuter services. And so it's really, you did mention though earlier, I'm going to go back on that, the vet shortage. You talked about high quality, high volume spay and neuter techniques and how that's critically important. And it's important not only that it's important for the cats, it's also, it's important because it's efficient, it's quick, and it's safer. And it's really, I believe, and you can disagree with me if you want, that it's a skill that every veterinarian out there should be aware of this process. Whether they're private practice, nonprofit, in a high volume clinic, they should be aware of this because there are tips, tricks, tools that they can implement at any point in any practice to help make accessibility to spay neuter services possibly more available.
I mean, I don't want to jump into any kind of quagmire, but there are a lot of specialties in veterinary medicine that require different skills and techniques and training and education level. High quality, high volume, like quick release spay and neuter is definitely a specialty. I've seen every version of spay and neuter, including things that are utterly horrifying. I mean, keep in mind, I've worked very globally, so I've seen some pretty bad surgery, and I've seen really good, really fast surgery surgeons that can do 100 plus animals in a day if someone else does everything else but cut and close. So it definitely, there's so much value in having those people. I also have that global perspective that, you know, so many other places, as they're just now or relatively recently looking at their animal population problems because they've had other things they focused on, the international standards and guidelines of things from the World Organization for Animal Health and from ICAM is a big one for dogs, International Coalition for Animal Management, dogs and cats, but they do a lot of dog, both make it very clear that TNVR is the solution. And so it's being implemented at a government level in a lot of places. That's like the starting point for them versus our starting point was very different. And we didn't get to TNVR until relatively recently as well, but we've institutionalized the animal shelter and these other ways that we manage the animals in our communities. Cats, and in some places, not as many in the US, but in some places, dogs like deserve a population level management strategy, which is not just bringing animals into a shelter and then figuring out what to do with them from there. If we could look as municipalities and as counties, as states, look at the population problem and really institute statewide, again, citywide, whatever, TNVR implementation, instead of all these little groups trying to fill that in and do it themselves with very limited resources, and maybe they, whatever percent they can get is great, but nothing can substitute doing true scientific research to understand the scale of your problem, the number of animals involved, and therefore the number of resources that are needed, and then providing those resources and actually implementing. You'll see real results much faster.
For sure. Yeah. And as long as you have a multi-factored project. So I was in Lowell, Massachusetts, and we offered spay neuter services, for owned cats, as well as had a separate designated TNR task force. And so within 3 years, they went from being overwhelmed to, oh, we can do transport. What's a kitten? We never see a kitten anymore. And isn't this great? So, you know, in these target areas, you can have maintenance level. I'm not going to say you're going to stop doing spay neuter. The spay neuter is never done. I mean, you cannot have a TNVR program without that N. You have to be able to have access to that N. And the same with the access to care. You always have to have access to spay neuter. It's never going to be checked off the list. We're never there. But we will be at a maintenance level. You can identify a level. And as the economy shifts, you may have to up your level of subsidized care if we have troubles with our economy or we have affordable housing issues in certain parts of the country. And so, therefore, it may be harder for folks to be able to afford veterinary care because they're spending 60% of their income on housing. So there's a whole range of different issues. I'm gonna change pivot here because you do have your global perspective. And one question that comes to me from so many listeners that are involved in TNVR projects or TNR projects outside of the United States is getting equipment. It's expensive to ship equipment outside to other countries or to other areas. And is that something that is a concern of yours?
It's a huge concern. And even though I have a bias in terms of being a person who sells this stuff, like working on projects other places in the world, good equipment is very hard to find. You can find some decent traps coming out of the UK. There's maybe a couple places in the EU. South Africa makes some traps, but very few dog traps. Most of them are made like full-on steel. They're extremely heavy, not portable. You can't do anything at scale with those kinds of traps. So you end up seeing a lot of net-based and dart-based programs for dogs in particular. Cat traps are smaller, so you can find them. I don't see the quality. We've come really far in manufacturing, especially Tomahawk. The manufacturing techniques are just so good. The right ratio of artisans and machines, they're just making it much quicker. It's hard to beat. No one does that. So it continues to be a challenge. As much as possible, we would really want to see governments doing this type of work and investing in the equipment, and that's where it's more possible. When it's small rescues trying to get a bunch of cat traps or dog traps or whatever, yeah, that's a huge cost, and there's not really a substitute here. Like, I can teach you how to net dogs, dart dogs, net cats, not so much dart cats. There's a few other tools that are a little more portable, but access is still a real problem. You end up kind of limited to like fishing nets and catch poles, and those are your animal control options. And that's a huge limiting factor for sure.
Yeah. You know, I find it very challenging at the Community Cats podcast with all of our educational programs. We deal with quite a few organizations that are outside of the United States just because they don't have access to this educational resource. It's one of the few ways that folks in other countries are able to learn about TNR, trapping tips and tricks, colony caretaking, how to run a program strategically, all different types of topics here. I have many wish lists in this world. And one of those wish lists is to have more equipment be available. I mean, we've all seen video of people catching cats in the laundry baskets and other things. And it might be fine, but I also think that there's a better way. And it does professionalize. I don't know. How do we bring forward TNR as the acceptable solution? It seems to be acceptable in the United States. And it's taken, 20 years for us to get there or so. But I would love to have this be a global initiative. And I do know that TNR is prevalent in some countries. They even say, oh, we support TNR, but then there's no, well, how are we going to get it done after the fact, right? So we can be supportive, but then what are the viable, where's the equipment, the process, the spay neuter that goes beyond that? But do you see globally more acceptance of TNR, or is it still in its infancy?
It's a mix. I mean, it's pretty prevalent in cats for sure. I wouldn't even say in most places. With dogs, it's a much more mixed bag. We're actually seeing a lot of progress in Saudi Arabia right now, where TNR is the expected standard, and they're expected to have programs rolled out by 2035 across the country, which is ambitious. I was working on a project there the last couple of years. They actually just bought a lot of Tomahawk product because that's the best product they could find. The alternative is stuff from China, which is acceptable. but it won't last nearly as long. So that is an option. But again, very hard to do as a small rescue, much more doable as a government. But again, it's complex because our cities don't really tolerate a lot of free roaming animals in them either. And so governments elsewhere are no more likely to tolerate that for a variety of public health concerns. So we just continue to do our best and continue to try to show the efficacy of TNR everywhere possible.
If folks are interested in finding out more in the work that you're doing, John, how would they do that?
You can follow me on any social. I'm primarily active on LinkedIn, and then I do post stuff on Facebook, Instagram. I'm not as good as following up with that. And then my website, humaneinnovations.com. So that's product sales, that's retail sales. I also do wholesale. Basically, if you're over 20 of anything, we can talk about pricing. And then consulting and training. So a lot of what I do is travel to organizations and help them build their programs or fix their programs, both dog and cat related.
And is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners today?
Just a big thank you for the work that everyone does in this space. It matters a lot. And I know there's a lot of frustration and burnout that happens in this piece of this industry. As we talked about earlier, we're never done. And while that can feel overwhelming by itself, we also need to keep in mind that our job is to do the best we can with every individual when possible. It's always going to be a work in progress. There's never a day we wake up and there's no longer a need for people who champion cats or dogs or any other species. There will always be work to be done. So keep that in mind. Our goal is not no cats. Our goal is to make sure that cats have the care that they deserve and need. And so we just keep working on that. So keep up the great work. But don't forget the value of the science involved in TNR and really understanding these are complex relationships. We really have to work together. And there are a lot of stakeholders. And some of those stakeholders don't like cats, but they still exist. And so we can get a lot more done if we engage with them and figure out how to make progress together. We may not all get what we want, but we can still do better for cats that way. Because again, we need long-term sustainable programming. It's not enough for us to be super engaged for 5 or 10 years and then burn out and get out of it. And we want long-term sustainable programs where the community invests in our programming.
Excellent. John, I want to thank you so much for agreeing to be a guest on my show, and I hope we'll have you on again in the future. And this is Expo Week, so we'll be seeing each other at Expo.
That's right. I'm doing a day-long workshop with Dave Polly and Mark Johnson on animal handling and capture, really, the three of us. This is like a dream team for me, so really excited to do that. And then I'll be in the Tomahawk booth, so come see us there if you're at Expo this week.
Excellent. All right. And I'll be over at Expo too. So thanks so much. We'll see you all next week.
That's it for this week. Please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave a review. We love to hear what you think, and a 5-star review really helps others find the show. You can also join the conversation with listeners, cat caretakers, and me on Facebook and Instagram. And don't forget to hit follow or subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, YouTube, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss a single show. Thanks for listening, and thank you for everything that you do to help create a safe and healthy world for cats.